Just a little reminder. One time I was in, when we were installing the four sets of Gornitai deities on Radha Damodar in Chicago, Srila Prabhupada was there, and the Radha Damodar devotees were dancing in front of Srila Prabhupada, doing what we call the hot step. And when Srila Prabhupada saw it, he immediately stopped us. And he indicated from the Vyasa-san, like that. In other words, in Krishna consciousness is a way of doing everything, including dancing. And that if we introduce new things into the dancing, Prabhupada didn't really approve of it. Because the whole idea of chanting and dancing is to hear about Krishna, remember Krishna, not to, you know, whatever we're doing, whatever it is. It's actually meant to help us concentrate on hearing and chanting about Krishna. That's part of the dancing. It's supposed to be a manifestation of ecstasy. I never saw Prabhupada twirl around like that quite. Nor could we really imagine Prabhupada doing that. Anyhow, that's just the point. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. One who considers his visible body, which is a product of the three modes of nature, to be independent of the soul, is unaware of the basis of existence, and therefore he is a rascal. That's abuddha, less intelligent. Those who are learned have rejected his conclusion because one can understand through full discussion that with no basis in soul, the visible body and senses would be insubstantial. Nonetheless, although his conclusion has been rejected, a foolish person considers it a reality. Purport. Without the basic principle of soul, the body cannot be produced. So-called scientists have tried in many ways to produce a living body in their chemical laboratories, but no one has been able to do it because unless the spirit soul is present, a body cannot be prepared from material elements. Such scientists are now enamored of theories about the chemical composition of the body. We have challenged many scientists to make even a small egg. The chemicals in eggs can be found very easily. There is a white substance and a yellow substance covered by a shell, and modern scientists should very easily be able to duplicate all this. But even if they were able to prepare, or were to prepare such an egg, and put it in an incubator, this man-made chemical egg would not produce a chicken. The soul must be added because there is no question of a chemical combination for life. Those who think that life can exist without the soul have therefore been described as abuddha, foolish rascals. In other words, the chicken is the best chemist because it can produce the chemicals and then produce life better than any scientist can do. The conclusion is the chicken should be awarded the Nobel Prize for chemistry. Again, there are those who reject the body, regarding it as insubstantial. They are of the same category of fools. One can neither reject the body nor accept it as substantial. The substance is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and both the body and the soul are energies of the Supreme Godhead as described by the Lord Himself in the Bhagavad Gita, 7:4-5. Bhumirapanalovayu kamanu mano buddhevacha ahankara iti yame vina prakritir ashtada apareyamitastvanyam prakritim vidime param jivabhuta mahabaho viedam daryate jagat. earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, all together, these eight comprise my separated material energies. But besides this inferior nature, almighty armed Arjuna is the superior energy of mine, which consists of all living entities who are struggling with material nature and are sustaining the universe. The body, therefore, has a relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, just as the soul does. Since both of them are energies of the Lord, neither of them is false, because they come from reality. One who does not know the secret of life is described as a Buddha. According to the Vedic injunctions, Aitadatmyam idam sarvam, sarvam kal vidam brahma. Everything is the Supreme Brahman. Therefore, both the body and the soul are Brahman, since matter and spirit emanate from Brahman. Not knowing the conclusions of the Vedas, some people accept the material nature as substance, and others accept the spirit soul as substance. But actually, Brahman is the substance. Brahman is the cause of all causes. The ingredients and the immediate cause of this manifested material world are Brahman. And we cannot make the ingredients of this world independent of Brahman. Furthermore, since the ingredients and the immediate cause of this material manifestation of Brahman, both of them are truth, satya, and there is no validity to the expression Brahma Satyam Jagan Mitya. This world is not false. Jnanis reject this world, and foolish persons accept this world as reality. In this way, they are both misguided. Although the body is not as important as the soul, we cannot say that it is false. Yet the body is temporary, and only foolish materialistic persons who do not have full knowledge of the soul regard the temporary body's reality and are engaged in decorating this body. Both of these pitfalls, rejection of the body as false and acceptance of the body's all in all, can be avoided when one is fully situated in Krishna consciousness. If we regard this world as false, we fall into the category of asuras who say that this world is unreal, with no foundation, no God in control. Asatyam apratishtam te jagat ahura anishvaram. As described in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, this is the conclusion of demons. Yatmano drishya guneshu saniti vyavyasyate swavyati rekato buddha vinanuvadam nakshatan manishitam samyagyatastyaktam upadadat puman. One who considers his visible body, which is the product of the three modes of nature, to be independent of the soul, is unaware of the basis of existence, and therefore is a rascal. Those who are learned have rejected his conclusion, because one can understand through full discussion that with no basis in soul, the visible body and senses would be insubstantial. Nonetheless, although his conclusion has been rejected, a foolish person considers it a reality. Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasthaya Buddha Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasatam Deve Gauravani Pacharne Nurvise Sarasunivadi Paskatya De Satarna Eka Desha Sitasya Gya Natosad Vistri Simyata Parasya Brahmana Shaktis Tatedam Akilam Jagat. It is said in the Vedas that Eka Desha Sitas Yagyar. Just like if a fire is situated in one place, its heat and light spread in all directions. Eka Desha Sitas Yagyar. Itasna Vistrisim. Itasna Vistrisim Yata. So, in the same way, Brahmasya Brahmana Shaktis, the Supreme Lord, is distributing his energies in all different directions. Parasya Brahmana Shaktis Tatadam Akilam Jagat. Throughout all this universe, the only thing that's visible are the energies of the Supreme Lord. This is called Bhumir Apanalo Vayu Kamano Buddha Evacha Ahankara Iti Yame Bina Prakriti Ashtada Bina Prakriti Prakritim Ashtada. Krishna has eight different separated energies known as earth, water, fire, air, intelligence, mind, and false ego. This is what the soul is conscious of. But also invisible to our present eyes is another energy, aparayam itastvam yam prakriti vidi me param jiva bhuta mahavaho iedam dare te jagat. The soul is another energy of Krishna, and the soul, when it's in the body, it is the cause for the body being alive. The reason why we, right now, our body appears to be alive is because we, the soul, within the body. But when the soul leaves the body, then the body is no longer alive. It's the same body, but minus the soul, it's called dead, and with the soul, it's called alive. But actually, at no point is the body ever alive, because it's always dead. It only appears to be alive because of the presence of the soul. Unfortunately, people who are abudaya, as explained here, they don't take the soul as having any importance. They take only importance what's going on with the body. Therefore, if they're invited to come and hear about the soul, they think it's a waste of time. They're only interested in hearing about the body or the subtle mind. The example is given that if one wants to take care of only his hat and coat, his clothes, but he has no interest in feeding himself. So this is certainly less intelligent. The person all day long is washing and taking care of his clothes, but when it's time for prashanam, he doesn't come because he has no time. Because it doesn't happen around here. But such a foolish person doesn't realize that at least as important or more important of taking care of his gross body or the coverings of the body, the hat and coat and shirt, etc. More important than that is to take care of the body, the self, within the body. But because people have no idea, no knowledge about the soul, therefore they're engaged in so many materialistic activity. This is called prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara Ahankara vimudatma kartaham iti manyate. Bewildered by the three modes of material nature, the soul falsely thinks himself to be the doer of activities which are in actuality carried out by the three modes. The soul is the observer, he is the conscious enjoyer or sufferer according to his desires. By his desire, different activities go on, and by those activities, he enjoys or suffers the results of his work in some future time. Just like bees, they gather different types of pollen from flowers, and they come together and they produce some kind of honey. So similarly, our different desires and activities, they combine together and they produce, at this time, our present experience. And according to how we're desiring and acting, according to our present experience, this creates a future reaction which will come together with other activities and produce an experience sometime in the future. although the soul is not directly doing anything in the sense that the material body is what's doing everything. The soul, because he's desiring something to be done, therefore he becomes the enjoyer of suffering. What is that verse? Prakriti, Karya karana kartrive hetu prakriti uchite purusha sugadukanam bhoktrive hetu uchite. That the material nature is said to be the cause of all causes and effects, and the living entity is the cause of different sufferings and enjoyments in this world. If you take a stick and you hit someone with it, then the immediate cause of their pain is the stick. But one cannot claim on one side that one is hitting the person, because it's the stick that's hitting the person. If you're arrested and brought to court of law and the prosecutor says, "My dear sir, you hit this person," you can't claim, "My dear prosecutor, this is a lie. I never hit the person. It was the stick that was hitting him." Similarly, although we're not directly the cause of our activities in the material world, we're not doing anything, still, we're the ultimate cause. Because without the soul's desire to be in the material world, he wouldn't be here. It is not that the Supreme Lord got together with the material energy one day and decided, let's do something interesting and torture some souls. So you can create the material world and I'll tell you what to do. And we'll send some souls down here and torture them for a while. That's not what happened. The soul, he desired to do something, and Krishna, in conjunction with material energy, made the arrangements to give him this playland to play in. Sometimes a mother may be cooking, and the daughter may want to also cook, but because she's very small, she's given a plastic kitchen. And with plastic pots and plastic chapatis, and she thinks she's cooking. This is all by the arrangements of the mother, and under illusion, the child is thinking she's doing the same thing that the mother is doing. Similarly, the material world is given to the conditioned soul because he wants to play like God. And he's given some material situation in which he's imagining that he's become the proprietor, the controller, and the enjoyer of the material energy. But he's not the controller, nor is he the enjoyer. He's the servant of the material energy, and he's the sufferer under the different arrangements of the three modes of nature. Sometimes he thinks he's suffering more, and sometimes he's suffering less, but he's always suffering. Even one goes up to the heavenly planets, one is always in anxiety because one has to die. Indra is in anxiety when the demons are going to come and attack. Will they kill him? Will they steal his wife? Will he become, kicked down as a hog again in the material world? What's going to happen? He's always in anxiety. What to speak of ourselves. And even Brahma, it is said, "A Brahma Bhuvana Loka Punarvartano Jana Mamupetya Tukunteya Punarjama Navidyate." Even Brahma is in anxiety. The person who's the engineer of the whole universe, who's controlling everything, who could see, who talks to Krishna personally sometimes in the form of Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, even he's in anxiety. Because anyone who's accepted the material body as factual, he must be in anxiety. One class of persons, they take the body as real. But another class of people, they say that the body's unreal. They say it has no substance. But how can it not have any substance? Because although it's temporary, still everyone has the experience that we're suffering here. At least the suffering is real. And the cause of our suffering must also be real. Even a dream at night is reality in the sense that it gives us a certain experience. This daydream called the material existence is nothing but a different phase of dreaming. And if we consider this a dream at night as unreal, or this daydream is real, or we can consider both of them as unreal, we've not taken account that the source of both the dream and the source of the present existence that we're under is all the same person, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is making arrangements through his material energy to give us these different types of experiences. The conclusion is that those who are learned, they understand that both the soul, the self within the body, is real, he's eternal, as well as the material body is also real. That the material energy is said to be, is known to be, oh, the living entity and the material energy are both to be eternal. Prakritim Purusha Chaiva Vidyanaru Bhavapi Vikaram Stragunam Chaiva Vidhi Prakriti Sambhava. Both the material energy and the soul is said, both said to be eternal, and the material energy is said to be the cause of all causes and effects in the material world. But this is realized by devotional service, that neither the karmis or the vikarmis nor the gyanis understand things properly. Only the devotees can understand things properly. Yenam deti purusham prakriti jai kunai saha sarvata vatmananopi na sabuya bijayate. That one who's a devotee of Krishna, who engages in devotional service, he can understand everything about the material energy, its transformations, about the Purusha, the Supreme Lord, and the Prakriti, the material energy, as well as the enjoyer, the living entity. Everything is revealed to him by the process of devotion to Krishna. Therefore it is said, Brahmarpanam Brahmahaivir, Brahmagno Brahmahutam, Brahmayavatena Gantavyam, Brahmakarma Samadhina. That a person is sure to obtain the spiritual kingdom because of his full contribution to spiritual activities, in which the consummation is absolute and the things which are offered are of the same spiritual nature. It is not that the devotees, they try to enjoy the material world thinking it's all in all. There's nothing more to do than try to, you know, exploit the material energy to the utmost. Where they had one beer commercial in America, it said that you better get all the gusto you can because you only go once around. Nor are they like the gyanis who say that this material world is unreal and therefore we should avoid it, reject all activities because they're all illusory. The devotee, he knows what is the value of the material world. He knows how to utilize it properly. Prabhupada gives the example. A person may be walking down on the street and he sees a 1,000-franc note on the street. And he immediately picks it up and puts it in his pocket and walks away. And another person who may walk down the street and he may see the same 1,000-franc note and he says, it's Maya, I won't touch it. And a third person may walk down the street and pick up the note and find the owner and give it to him. So the first person is not honest. And the second person, he's not very intelligent. But the third person is both honest and intelligent. Similarly, those who are materialists, they try to exploit the material energy for their enjoyment, and they become bound by the material modes of nature and forget about the existence of the self, or the soul. The second are the gyanis, who reject the material energy as Jagan-mitya, or Brahma-satyam Jagan-mitya. Is that how it goes? say Brahma Satyam Jagan Mitya. They reject the material world as being unreal and that only Brahman is real. Only the self is real. But they forget about the real self, the supreme self. But the devotee, he knows the supreme self is real, the little self, the living entities are real, and the material energy is real. And by engaging devotional service, everything becomes Brahman. Everything becomes spiritual. Therefore, even in the material world, they live in the spiritual world. Prabhupada gives the example, the difference between the impersonalist and the personalist is that the impersonalist, they taste water and they don't really, they just taste water. But the devotee, he tastes the water and he thanks Krishna for kindly supplying the water to quench his thirst. That he remembers Krishna. He doesn't think that it is by accident that Krishna has created this material world with all the different amenities. Sunlight for heat and light, moonlight for cooling, water for quenching thirst, air for breathing. Everything is created so scientifically just to satisfy the needs of the conditioned souls within the material world. Therefore, the devotee, he's thankful to the Creator. He doesn't deny Him. Nor does he say that this material world is unreal. As it says here, asatyam apratishtam te, jagato huranishwaram aparashparam sambhutam kimanyakamahaitukam. The materialists, the impersonalists, they say the world is unreal. So although they say it has no foundation, has no God in control, still they themselves are expert at trying to exploit the material energy. They deny that there is any proprietor. They deny that there is any source of the material energy. They say everything is by accident, but they don't live their lives accidentally. They struggle hard against the material energy, trying to control it without any profit, and ultimately they die. If there is no controller, there is no foundation, it was all by accident, and why is everyone forced to die here? Why is everyone forced to grow old? Why is it that no one can change the way the material energy works? It's all just arbitrary. Only a less intelligent person, just like if one is arrested and put into prison, and he screams out, I'm free, I'll never listen to the government. You can't touch me, you can't do anything to me. They sit him down in a chair and they slap him. Say, I'm free, you can't touch me. You're being slapped, you're imprisoned, you can't budge one inch, and you're claiming that you're free. This is craziness. Similarly, those who say that there's no control in the material world, but why is it that they're forced to die and grow old? If there's no control. It's just due to less intelligence. The conclusion is that there is a control behind the material world. Every moment, everyone, every living entity is being controlled, and that control is under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And an intelligent person, he takes shelter of Krishna. And a less intelligent person, he goes on imagining himself to be independent, or imagines himself to be this material body. This is called abhudaya, or less intelligence. So one should not be less intelligent. One should come to real intelligence and therefore avoid the unnecessary suffering of living in the material world without any profit. I'll stop there. Thank you. Are there any questions?
Why is it that although we understand that Prabhupada nicely explains that we are not this body and we may have some realization to some extent that it doesn't make sense to continue to desire to enjoy this body, but still the mind doesn't stop coming up with proposals. So why is it that after understanding the theory and even adding some realization that process of desiring continues?
One time one devotee was said to Prabhupada that Maya is very, very strong. And Prabhupada said, that's because your determination is very weak. Yoga chalati manasa, it's Maya's duty to try, as soon as one tries to make advance in spiritual life, then it's Maya's duty to try to delude the devotee. Therefore Arjuna said, Yoyam yogas tvaya prokta, sam yena madhusudana, etas yaham napashami, chanchaladvastitim stiram. Because that's the nature of the mind. That it's, Arjuna said, the system of yoga, which you've described to me, seems unbearable, or because the mind is very restless and unsteady. That's the nature of the mind. But our problem is not the mind, it's our attachment to the mind. The mind simply sets forth different ideas, and when we become attached to them, then we have to suffer or enjoy those ideas. But by practice, gradually we can accept higher ideas, and as the more we accept higher ideas, then the lower ideas we become unattached to, or unattached, vairagya. Practice, Krishna says, practice and detachment. Suitable practice, such as hearing, and as we hear and then practice, then the result is gradually there is attachment to the superior principle, which automatically leads to detachment from the inferior principle. So that means 24 hours a day. If we're engaged 24 hours a day in Krishna consciousness, then there's no Maya. But even if there's one moment during the day we forget Krishna, then there's Maya. But gradually, Krishna says, Shanai Shanaru Parupadramed, Buddhi Drita Grihitaya Atma Samstamanat Kritva Nakinchit Api Chintayat. Gradually, step by step, with full conviction, one should become situated in trance by means of intelligence, sustained by full conviction, and thus the mind should be fixed on self alone and should think of nothing else. So gradually as our conviction grows, as our realization grows, then the mind becomes progressively more fixed in Krishna consciousness, and our attachment to other material ideas diminishes progressively or proportionally. Yes.
Would you say that there's a purpose of material creation in relationship to Krishna, specifically his pastime?
No. He doesn't have any pastime here. I mean, he has pastime as the Purusha avatars, creation, maintenance, and annihilation of the material world. He has a pastime. Sometimes it's said his pastime is the Purusha avatars or the incarnations. But it's not that Krishna ever wanted the material world himself. Although it fulfills his purpose in the sense that just like a father, he may have a rebellious son, so he wants him to be rectified. So he gives him to a cruel, chastising agent to rectify his son. But it's not that the father desired the son to be rebellious and therefore created this pastime of chastising his son. But because it's necessary, therefore he does what's necessary for the well-being of his son. Krishna has created the material world simultaneously to fulfill the desires of the conditioned soul, the rebellious souls, and at the same time to rectify them. But he doesn't really take any pleasure in the creation or of the material world. He's aloof. He's neutral.
So the esoteric understanding we have about why Lord Chaitanya appears or why Lord Shiva likes to have a good fight, they're like, just happened that the material world is created and then Krishna has more pleasure by having some specific pastime in the material world?
Well, he's never in the material world. His pastimes are not of the material world. His pastimes are transcendental. But it's not that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, unless it was a material world, he couldn't, I mean, eternally in Navadvipa, in the spirit, in Goloka Vrindavan, is a place of Navadvipa. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu resides there eternally. It's not that when the material world was created at some point, he became Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Radha and Krishna combined together. But they're eternally combined together as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Navadvipa. But they come here, or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes here, because to attract the conditioned souls back to Navadvipa.
It's
not a big fight for Lord Nrisimhadev. It's already, just like if the fight is fixed before the match, it doesn't give you as much pleasure as if it's a real fight. So here in the material world, everyone knows, no one puts any money on Haranyakashipu. Maybe a few demons because they haven't been informed. But the fight is already fixed. It's already determined. A little excitement here and there. Krishna drops his charanga bow, or he drops his club, something like that, or he lets Haranyakashipu escape for a moment. But everyone knows what's going to happen. Still, it's a little exciting because it's transcendental. But Krishna also fights in the spiritual world. He fights with Sudama, with Sridham. But there, it's even more exciting because sometimes Krishna loses. You don't really know who's going to win. So that's even more exciting. But here, it's transcendental, it's spiritual, so there's pleasure. But everyone knows what's going to happen, more or less. Because maybe the cowherd boys, there's some kind, or the parents, Mother Jasoda, Nana Maharaj, they're under Yogamaya, so they don't know that Krishna is going to defeat the Kaliya serpent. So there's some emotional ecstasy, feeling, wanting to protect Krishna. But for Krishna, there's more, and Krishna enjoys their intense love for him. But in the spiritual world, Krishna also fights. He didn't create the material world, just have a good fight. Although, as you said, he takes advantage of it. Just to show us, if you're going to fight Krishna, don't expect to win. Yeah, you should give it back to the real owner. Well, it depends. You have to see. Mother Gita, I heard that Mother Gita Govinda in Tokyo found a wallet and had $5,000 in it. And she gave it back. And the man was very happy. He gave her a reward of $500. And that way the reputation of the devotees increased. But one has to use his intelligence. I couldn't really say. But ultimately, the real owner is Krishna. So if you gave it to Krishna, it wouldn't be so bad. As long as it wasn't a scandal about it. But sometimes it's good just to be honest. Give it back. Because Krishna is not a poor man. He provides us whatever we need. What's that? If you don't give it to Krishna, you will. If you think I'm Krishna's representative, so I'm as good as Krishna, you might get into trouble. Yeah.
I was in Russia. They found a wallet with many checks and bank cards, and also like a few $1,000, and also with an address card in it, so they found this man. And they invited him to come to the temple. And they gave back his wallet. And he opened it and he expected to just see his bank cards and his checks and the money he expected to be out, because normally that's what people do if they got the money. They give the wallet back. So he was so surprised that he gave this few $1,000, he gave it to the devotees. And because he was more happy to have all his bank cards and checks back. And he took prasadam and he was... It was very favorable to the devotees after that. Plus, he gave all the money, so the devotees both.
Yeah, I mean, our philosophy is matrivat paradareshu, paradwareshu lostrivat. That a learned person, he sees every woman except for his wife to be just like his mother. And he sees other people's properties just being like garbage in the street. And he sees every living entity to be just like his own self. Such a person is learned. We haven't quite been trained up like that. But if you go to certain countries, they definitely are trained up like that. In Saudi Arabia, for instance, if you find someone's wallet on the street and you keep it, and they catch you, then they cut your hands off. Some people generally, they leave the wallet on the street until... So we have to be a little cautious. And if you don't give it to Krishna, somehow or another you take it, then Krishna may cut your hands off. Sometime in the future, the material energy will take care of you. Anything else?
You reminded us from the very beginning that we should remember that kirtan is for the pleasure of Krishna. So, that we should remember about it. So, what do you think about this ecstatic kirtans led by Indradyumna Maharaj or maybe Govinda Maharaj?
Well, if they're ecstatic, they must be nice.
Yeah, but it's very difficult to distinguish. I mean, when I look at such kirtan, to distinguish what is to please Krishna and what is just for fun.
Anyhow, if you're pleasing Krishna, then it'll be fun. But this is not. Better to do what you think is right and not worry about so much about what other people they think is right. But we should follow Prabhupada's example. Prabhupada set a certain example what kirtan is, and we can see that. And if we follow it, certainly we'll be ecstatic, because Prabhupada was ecstatic. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande.
Yeah.